come to Jar with Zemdosa. I'm your host, and I've been running this podcast for the last 6 months, and I had come great speakers, coaches, entrepreneurs, people who would like to share a hard conversation with me and have a great dialogue with people who shared some great wisdom on my podcast. So do check it out. It's available on Spotify, iTunes, and all the major podcast platforms. Today is also an exceptional guest today who is based in Basingstoke, UK, Hampshire. That's my used to be where I used to live. His name is Chris. Full name is Chris Christopher Stone instead of Chris. Well, his short name is Chris. And he is a virtual agile coach. Now, when we talk about agile, it's quite a small word, but it has a deep meaning, which my guest is going to dive into and tell us what this entails in more details. So welcome, Chris, to my show, Chai with Zemdosa.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you very much for hosting me on your podcast today. It's great to be here. I look forward to talking to you.
Pleasure is all mine. So tell my audience, first of all, who Chris is and what is his purpose in this transient world?
Well, Chris is, as you mentioned, the virtual agile coach. And what that means is, essentially, I've been fortunate enough to have been doing distributed agile for years now. In fact, if I cast my mind back many years when I began getting involved in agile ways of working, I recall everyone always aspired for those co-located teams. They always said co-located is best. And I realized the more I thought about it, the very vast majority of the agile teams I've ever worked with have always had some element of distributed agile. I never really had those co-located teams. Now, doing distributed agile has its own challenges. You've got different ways of facilitating. You lack that face-to-face interaction, those visible cues. And obviously this year, when the pandemic struck, it forced everyone to become virtual coaches, virtual scrum masters, whatever that may be. And it prompted me to share some of my experiences with everyone. So what I'm about, basically, I'm all about immersing people in the fun of what agile can be. You know, it doesn't have to be a boring meeting, you know, in particular retrospectives. A common theme I observe with agile teams is that they get into these stale habits of saying, oh, what did we do last time? What are we going to do next time? And it can become a bit disengaging and boring. So I'm always seeking to gamify, to make work fun. And it's not fun for the sake of fun. I'm not trying to force fun upon people. I'm just trying to be creative for a good cause, right? To try and connect people in different ways to one another, to content, to immerse themselves in different ways of doing things so that they, in my experience, tend to produce better results, better outcomes, enjoy themselves along the way, because I'm a firm believer that happy people produce better results and they enjoy their work far more.
True. So when it comes to agile, as you said, as you mentioned, you know, it's sometimes quite new terminology at the moment as well, even though it's been going on for almost about 8-9 years, I would say, in the industry. But still is, for some people, when we talk about agile, it's still new. So give us a small definition, as in a little bit more descriptive definition of agile, and how is beneficial for which industry is more beneficial?
Okay, so it's an interesting question. So you mentioned agile there and how long it's been around. Agile has been around for quite a while, right? Probably some 30 years, maybe not in the term agile, but the ways of doing things iteratively, frequently, regular feedback, these things aren't brand new. The term agile itself, and in particular the Agile Manifesto, that was released in 2001 by a group of practitioners in Utah. They came together and they theorized about what they could do, and they came up with the Agile Manifesto, a set of principles and values. And obviously we're now 20 years later on that, which is a great opportunity of time to reflect on what Agile is. Now, for people that are new to Agile, Agile, and this is my description, and let's bear that in mind, it's mine, it may not be one that everyone agrees with, but my definition of Agile, how I would describe it to people that are new to it, is it's just this large experiment, right? It's a tool belt. Imagine around my waist right now, I'm carrying a tool belt, and in my left hip, I've got Scrum, and that represents maybe a hammer. And on my right hip, I've got a saw, and that represents Kanban, yeah, or another Agile framework or methodology or approach. And to me, Agile is this constant experiment where you are learning frequently what works for you. Now, I'm not a fan of some of going into companies and saying, hey guys, you're going to do the Spotify model, or you're going to do Scrum only, or you're going to do scaled Agile. What I would rather do is listen, understand what they need, what they've tried, what they failed with, what their outcomes are, and ultimately try and help them discover what Agile means to them and find their Agile. And that might be through borrowing various tenets from all these little different bits of frameworks out there until they ultimately find something that works for them. So to me, Agile is an experiment in continuous improvement, continuous adaptation, continuous learning. That's the way I would describe Agile.
Wow, that's beautiful description what you have said. And again, as you said, you know, it's a trial and error. A lot of people try a lot of things and trying to understand as what you say. Instead of jumping into and started taking out flows, you just listen and say, okay, this is where we are going to find the right solution. This is the right way to bring in together, instead of not, oh, yeah, this is wrong or this is right. It's about bringing together and becoming the conduit to the end results or the right way of going forward within the organization. Because a lot of things and a lot of people been inexperienced in different areas and they want to gain more experience in different areas, but because there is a capacity blockage which they are not ready to receive, because we are being told that, oh well, you've been doing this, you will be doing that for the rest of your career. You are sitting in this organization and they are not given the opportunity to learn something new. But again, has said that a lot of organizations have this training element where they want to send their people to learn something new, skill sets. And are in your experience, people who have been through those training, were they ready to go on training, or were they happy to go on training? Because sometimes you say you want to use that budget of training, and people were being sent on training, but they were not being ready for those training, and they just come back after 7 days of training, and when you say and they will be put back where they were already rusting, and so you rather complete that task, new task, we'll think about it in the near future, but let's work on your existence. What is your view when people are going on training? What sort of target should be put in
for people receiving training? What target should we put in there?
Yeah.
So for me, when I'm delivering training personally, I am looking to get out from it, or what I'm looking to provide is information that the people that I'm working with, that I'm training, are looking for. So I'm far more inclined when I do training to crowdsource what people most want to cover. And the way I do that is there might be, let's say I took a one-day training course I've delivered, and on it there's a series of topics that I think are important to be covered throughout the day. But what I might find is when I first ask the group, the attendees, hey, what do you guys want to know? What do you guys want to learn about? And in fact, here's a backlog of topics, and I'll allow them to choose which one they want to work on first. Now, as long as certain core topics happen throughout the day, what I actually tend to do is I try to mimic agile ways of working through the training course. So I say, right, we're going to empower you guys to decide the order of things. This is, again, something that we do in Agile. I'm going to break the day out into increments, you know, iterations, and let's say an hour and a half represents a sprint. And in that time frame, you get to choose the few topics you want to work through first. And then as we start the next iteration, we can reflect and say, do we still want to cover these topics, or do we want to change something around based on what we're doing there? So we start to embed in Agile principles throughout even doing the training. But what I want to get from training is to give people information that they are going to find useful, and most importantly, actionable takeaways, things that they can actually do back in their working lives, experiments that they can try back with their working lives, because it is no one size fits all situation. You know, you could go out there and provide training and say, oh, everyone work in exactly the same way and do exactly this and do exactly that. But that might not work for their given situation, their given culture, their given company. So what I'd rather do is say, here's lots of things you could try. And here's how those changes have been embedded in my experience. And here's how they've been taken. They may work for you, but if it doesn't work, here are some alternatives. I try and leave people with actionable takeaways. So in terms of outcomes, I'm looking for, to sum up on your question there, from delivering training to participants, is to leave them with actionable takeaways, learnings they're keen to work on, and ideally to enjoy the experience as well.
Amazing, amazing. But one thing which I want to reiterate over here is when you had the training and when you go back to your task or to your job again, how often people start using that training where they went on training? Because usually the manager or the director wants somebody to just get on with the work because it's a 7-day or 5-day backlog now. And because if there is a new thing, if they wanted to implement, they would be given no opportunity. So how people can tackle that?
So I guess that I'd be mindful here of a few things, right? If you go on a training course and it's 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, whatever that may be, that is not going to instantaneously turn you into an expert, right? What it will do is it'll give you new knowledge, new things to try, new data to support trying something. And what I would do is if someone is faced with that scenario where they're going on a course, they're coming back, then some management is expecting them to instantly do something in a certain way, I'd be looking for them to manage expectations with that manager and say, hey, look, I've obviously just done this course. Great, I've got some knowledge now. But what I need from you, the support I need from you, is some understanding that this is new to me, right? This is something I now have more knowledge and I'm better equipped for, but it might not work straight away. And what we need to bear in mind is destigmatizing failure. Failure is not a negative, it's a learning opportunity. And this is one of the phrases I commonly use, you know. And the problem is that leadership in particular, the people that are paying the budget for these training courses, they don't like that word failure. They don't want to hear it. So I often try to rebrand failure as learning. And if we can embed that notion throughout, you know, agile teams, throughout companies, throughout organizations, to embrace failure rather than be fearful of it, I think we'll go a long way to succeeding.
Absolutely, absolutely. Completely aligned with it, because when I run a psychometric assessment, we have a set of 7 areas that look at it, and we will identify the strength, but we don't call it weaknesses, we call it learning development now, because you are looking at to increase your knowledge, to capture those areas to be align with your traits, because you have so many great traits within yourself which you can increase in knowledge and in activities or in action and everything. It requires somebody to coach you to achieve that results for you. So we always mention that instead of weaknesses, we'll say it's a learning development, and you can achieve it. There is no such thing as you can't. You can if you put your mind to it. That's a great way of putting this together, asking or advising the senior management. This is going forward is going to be more realistic results, instead of you are looking to cut corners and asking the person to deliver something which is not going to be viable in a longer term. So, well, we are in this scenario where we are in COVID-19. And since it started in March, a lot of things have happened during that period. In your view, what would be the best action would have been taken by the senior executive in the organization with this scenario?
So for me, something I would heavily encourage any senior leadership to do with regards to getting the best out of this remote working situation would be to be vulnerable, be open and honest, and ask, you know, ask their people how they can set each other up for success in this remote working world. And I'm a fan of the concept of doing a remote working charter. And the way this works is you would have some sort of workshop session with lots of participants. You would invite everyone to have a voice and share, you know, what are good examples of remote working look like? What do bad examples look like? Where have we seen remote working be terrible for us? And how can we keep each other in the loop asynchronously when we perhaps can't be in every single meeting? You know, those sorts of questions. And from that, you can start to tease out good, clear remote working practices where we might be able to keep each other in the loop asynchronously, where we might be able to remove some of the bad working examples of remote working. And by doing that activity, I feel that will set us up for success. I think the reality is, for me, going forwards, we're probably not going to ever return to that full co-located situation anymore. The world, the working world, is just getting more and more distributed. Yeah, we're working with people from various time zones, various countries. There are now, you know, there's the concept of the low touch economy. People are going to be more reluctant to do things that require traveling in hour and a half to get to an office, touching various or coming in contact with various people on the way, particularly until there's widespread vaccinations and things. And I think the reality is, at least, you know, for the next year or two in particular, we're going to have this hybrid model or fully remote working model. And yeah, you can see that in the fact that many large companies have pivoted towards this. You just need to look at Twitter, Microsoft, GitLab. These large companies have all gone fully remote and said, hey guys, what we're doing now is we're not going to force everyone back into the office. We will have some offices open in case that works for some people. Some people prefer to be in an office and that works for them, but we're not going to force everyone back into an office anymore. So the reality is we're going to be distributed. So let's set each other up for success by determining what does good look like for us, because it's not, again, it's not uniform for everyone. We can learn things from GitLab and these other large companies who've been doing it. We can learn from each other. We can share with each other, but let's create a standard, you know, a guideline, some basic principles for what good looks like. And they won't be set in stone because we'll learn from them, do a retrospective on it, look at it again in the future and say, hey, is this, we've been doing this for 3 months now. Is this still working with us? Do we need to add anything? Do we need to remove anything? And that to me would be my one tip to any senior leader. If you are thinking about how to set yourselves up for success, sorry, in this remote working world, do a remote working charter workshop with your people. Allow them a voice.
Very good. Very good. I think I'm aligned to it, as I mentioned, because remote working has indeed have a lot of pros and have a little bit of cons as well in them. But I will say, if you look at the number, people are happy to work from home now. I have been listening and I'm reading a lot of horrible stories as well, that where employers are forcing their employees to come back to work without any proper health care. So you are creating more problems for people. And again, you know, childcare has been changed. The way they have started doing their work plan has been changed. And they are now settled in working from home. And I think going forward, as you mentioned, you know, more and more companies are looking at working from home, and the dynamic of employment will be changing as well, because people will be thinking of, okay, people are working from home. Why do I have to hire people from here? Why can't I hire people from Vietnam or India or Pakistan or these places are going to be cheaper for me, going to exactly the same thing? Why should I not look at that way? Because that's also going to change the drastic dynamic of employment, which is already changed by Google and by Facebook, because they are saying that people, you got skill sets, and if you're sitting in anywhere in the world, you're going to be hired. You don't have to come to work because you're going to be working from home. you're going to be matching the time zone. That's it, nothing else. And that's where the future lies. I think more and more people are still finding it difficult to adapt to this new way of working. But I think as soon as people will adapt, they're going to be finding this realistic going forward in life. Otherwise, they will be sitting, I think we'll go through with this sort of a Zoom depression or Zoom syndrome or a couple of other name has been going on in the media, social media at the moment. So, yeah, go ahead.
So I was just going to reflect on that. I think it's a really important notion to bear in mind. The reality is that it will change, as you said, recruitment, onboarding. There are so many facets that will be altered by this new remote working. And you know, in the past, it would be, right, we're hiring someone. We need to look within a certain radius from the office because we want to make sure that they're going to commute to us and they're going to be there. Whereas that all that did was narrow your potential talent pool down. You know, you search via, say you're a recruiter, you'd search on a platform for CVs within a certain range and you wouldn't search beyond that. Whereas now it's broadened that talent pool so widely, you know, to other countries, even to the whole of the country. And it just means that your options are far broader, far wider. So you can attract some of the best talent. Now, the other thing to bear in mind, I think, is that there are going to be companies out there that perhaps don't adapt quickly enough. They don't put in place great methods for remote working. They don't embrace this remote working way of doing things. And actually what will happen is some top talent may leave them and they may struggle to attract new ones because they've got this perhaps older mindset. I think what will happen is there will be a lot of opportunities for companies to downsize their physical office profiles. A lot of them will maintain some offices that you can then go into for certain collaborative meetings, certain team building exercises and things like that. But my feeling is that the vast majority of work will be from home now. And it might be kind of three or 4 days from home, 1 day in the office, as opposed to the other way around where it used to be pretty much every day in the office and 1 day at home. Yes. That's where I think we're probably heading towards.
And there is new phenomena starting. It's not new, actually. It's again, they're saying that 4 days on and 3 days off, or 4 days on and 4 days off, something like that as well. So you're working 12-hour shift for 4 days and then you have 3 days off. And that's also engaging in sort of a way of working because everything is working around the clock now. Within UK, things are, a lot of companies are working around the clock. Now, if you look at, because of COVID, tier three or tier two, depending on which place you are in, shopping centers are open 24 hours now. And yep. You can imagine the IT has to work around the clock. If there is something that's a problem, they need to solve the problem out. You can't have a saying that, oh, well, I only work from 9 to 5. Those days are gone now. I think we have to be flexible. We have to be available. We have to manage our time. And I think the responsibility of not ourselves as well as the responsibility of the leadership, your manager, your co-worker, to be in touch, to know how you are finding yourself in this scenario. Because not every household is the same household. If you are living with your partner and you have been had so many underlying problems, you will not be staying in that sort of a chaotic scenario or chaotic problem because you can't see a child is screaming, or you are not having a good communication with your spouse, and it will create a lot of more problems for you. I think those sort of things also needs to be bear in mind. And this is also needs to be addressed. As you mentioned about the charter for home working, it's important all the companies should think about it to implement that. And it is in the long run, it's going to be a very fruitful for everybody. And as you mentioned earlier about, you know, you have seen in your career that there are a lot of big offices. Yeah, why you need big offices? And people are going to cut down. And all those offices are going to turn into houses, I would say. And that's also another area.
There's another interesting the idea I've been seeing, not necessarily idea, but movement, I guess, I've been seeing growing out in the wider industry, given all of this. Mm-hmm. And it's the rise of the chief collaboration officer. So obviously you've got CEO, CTO, COO, et cetera, but the chief collaboration officer or the chief remote officer, those people that their responsibility is enabling remote success. You know, the people that are going out there doing the transformative efforts to set a company up, you know, large or small, for being successful remotely, given the fact that we can't be face-to-face anymore. And I'm seeing and hearing more and more examples of that. I was at a conference, Remote Forever Summit, a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And this was mentioned there. This is a conference all about remote working. So there were obviously speakers that were or have been doing remote working for years from various different companies. And there's more and more examples of these types of roles coming up. I think that's, again, part of the future.
Yeah, amazing. The world is changing completely upside down. I think it's for good, I would say, because there is always things required to be changed. And people who does not like change will be the one who is going to be suffering. And people who really embrace the change will be flourishing going forward in their career and then their life as well. In view to this whole scenario, as you know, the performance mechanism is now changed, and because you're working alone and people are not watching you, your boss is not watching you all the time. What sort of, in your experience, how managers should be appraising their employees now? In what sense, in what sort of a criteria there should be?
Interesting. So how managers should appraise individual performance, given that it's difficult to see what they're doing?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Working from remotely now, you don't see them, because in the workplace, you can see them. This guy is sitting over here. He's working on this and this and that. But now we are all working remotely. And how are you going to appraise it? And
I mean, I would argue, to be honest, that this principle for me transcends remote working anyway. I would, even if we went back 2 years from now, or even a year from now, back when being face-to-face was more the norm, I would be reticent to coach any sort of manager to appraise their employees based on what they can physically see from them. Yeah, just because someone's working long hours, does that mean they're producing the right outcomes? No. Equally, if someone can produce great value, great outcomes in 2 hours out of an 8-hour working day, is that not what you should be measuring them upon more than how much physically they're working? So I think for me, this transcends the remote working era, and it's probably antiquated management principles that are measuring employees based on physically how many hours they're working. And those sorts of things. Now, there's always going to be certain industries, certain roles where, you know, the amount of time you are available working is something to be measured upon. When you've got, I don't know, service level agreements and things like that, and you need to be online frequently and presently, I would definitely be looking to coach management in these situations to appraise employees based on the value they're delivering, not the volume they're delivering. It's a phrase I like to use: value over volume. And for me, the way you one way to try and move towards that and understand that is coaching teams to engage with their customers more frequently. You know, there's so many companies out there, so many teams out there that are all, oh, how much velocity is this team delivering? How much, what's their lead time, et cetera, et cetera. And they are valuable metrics in their own right. But I care less about that. I care more about how often that team is engaging with their users, how often they're interacting with them, understanding their pain, their problems, and solving those problems. So I'm more inclined to coach towards a measurement based on the amount of times they're interacting with customers, the amount of times they're failing or learning from that, because that, to me, failure breeds innovation, and the value they're delivering as opposed to the volume of work they're delivering.
Very true. I think you nailed it, because I think it's all about the performance of within the individual as well as the team. It's not about the volume, it's about the value they're adding. It's all about the value, how much value you're adding to your customers, your internal user or external user, and how you are looking after your individual team member as well. Because if you have a great team, your team needs to be given congratulations on delivering tasks and everything, instead of instigating them that why you didn't do this or why you didn't do that. And there shouldn't be a blaming culture. There should be a harmonious culture in regards to working as a team. Because now we are scattered around globally. People work in a different time zone, a different teams. I remember in my career within big companies, my team used to be based in Bengaluru and then Singapore, then Poland and America. So you can imagine that there are completely different time zones we used to work. And I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to have a conversation with my manager sitting in America and the team member sitting in Singapore and India. So we used to have a conversation at that time to understand what's been discussed yesterday in America, what has happened, what changes have happened. And now in the UK, we are awake. We are taking the next course of action. What we anticipate, what's going to happen next, and how we're going to deal with it. So a lot of dynamics has changed and it's still changing. And I think they are changing for the best. And a lot of people are happy because it's also helping them reduces their expenses in terms of fuel, in terms of going back and forth. Time is the most precious asset, which they can spend more time with their family and members as well, cutting on the commute as well. So, okay, so tell us about your... Do you do one-to-one this coaching, or do you do a organization coaching? What sort of coaching do you offer with this, your virtual agile coach as a coach?
Yeah, it varies. So I've done a lot of company level enterprise coaching where I'm leading communities of practice, where I'm mentoring other Scrum Masters and trying to embed agile principles and agile change at the organizational level. I mentor a number of external Scrum Masters as well. And I've obviously done coaching on a one-to-one basis also. Right. So it does entirely vary. I'm kind of flexible as to the needs of the situation.
Excellent. And how people can find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at the Virtual Agile Coach. Mm-hmm. I've got Twitter, which is virtual_agile. And I've got a website, www.thevirtualagilecoach.co.uk. On that website, there's lots of free resources, including retrospective templates that you can try in Mural and Miro, various immersive themed ones, you know, Diwali, James Bond, Star Wars, all sorts of different styles. Lots of Christmas ones that I've just been releasing recently. Mm-hmm. There's lots of agile games on there. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge fan of gamifying meetings and content, gamifying agile, teaching agile using games. Mm-hmm. I did a great one at a meetup I hosted last night called the Agile Arcade. Mm-hmm. And it's called the virtual name game. And what you do is you use it as a way of contextualizing the damage of constant multitasking and context switching. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is you divide people up into a group, and you've got perhaps we had seven people acting as customers, and one person was the developer. And when I'm playing this game, I often encourage the most senior person in the room to take on the role of the developer, because I want them to experience how it feels when they're constantly being interrupted and reprioritized. So the way it works is in round one, you get that developer. They are responsible for writing everyone's name. The problem is all those customers, their goal is to get their name written first. And all they're going to do is shout their name repeatedly, Chris, 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 Sam, Sam, Sam. And it makes it really difficult to hear and understand and focus on which name to write first. And there's certain voices that get drowned out by others. This represents the scenario in the real world of the person who shouts loudest often gets what they want, you know, as a method of prioritization. We then go into another round where we try and make everyone a little bit happy. And what happens in this round is that developer, rather than writing the full name this time, they write the first letter of one person's name, then move on to the next letter of another person's name, and they just go around and around until everything gets done. And that means everyone gets a little bit of attention, but the consequence is it's very slow. You know, you start a lot of things, you don't finish them. Mm-hmm. And in the final round, we empower the developer to choose whose name they write first. So they often choose the shortest name. And in this scenario, in this round, the customers this time are not trying to shout over each other. They're going to try and help that person. And that, again, demonstrates empowerment and focus. And the consequence of playing those two rounds is that the time it takes to write the names goes down and down and down and down. The final round is far more, the developer in that scenario usually comes out feeling, oh my God, I'm going crazy here, because they're just being shouted at constantly. And it's a bit more cathartic in the final round because they finish all the things and they're not being yelled at. And as mentioned, I like that person developing to be the most senior person, because they're the person often furthest removed from the actual work, you know, the people on the ground doing the work. It's a great way to contextualize the damages of constant multitasking and context switching. So I like to use games.
Amazing. I can see you have a gaming chair as well for yourself.
I do, yeah.
Amazing. So great way of interacting, getting people into be interactive with each other and using a game, a gamification as a tool to create some great communication between all of them, which is quite a great way of looking at it. So thank you very much, Chris, for sharing this amazing insight about the way you deliver or the way you approach things in regards to agile coaching. Now this is the round where I would like to know more about you. So when audience are going to listen to you and they can resonate with you, now, one area of Pandora box which you already opened is about your gaming interest, which you are very enthusiastic about. You already got a gaming chair as well, which is more suited to your colors as well. So what sort of games do you play?
I wish I had the time for games these days. I used to play them a lot when I was younger. Nowadays, I struggle to find the time for it. And I'm more likely to be out playing some sort of sport, American football or hockey. I'm all right to be out running or lifting heavy things and weights. When I do get time for games these days, they tend to be very non-linear games that I can just play a game of for half hour and then put down without having to come back and remember what I was doing last time. So those tend to be the sort of games. So things like FIFA or Rocket League or something like that. I do wish I had more time for games these days.
Okay.
And but I get my gaming jollies through creating games in the workplace now.
Excellent. Okay. We will like to get some information on your podcast when I release some information about what sort of game you're creating, so people will be indulging those sort of things. And I will get the information regards to your website as well. Are you a foodie, or you doesn't mind eating anything?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that question.
Are you a foodie? Are you enjoy your food?
Ooh.
Or you just you're just happy with fish and chips? Fish and chips is
okay. I love experimenting with food. I love traveling and experimenting with food. I've had some really nice sushi in Kyoto, Japan. Uh-huh. I've eaten street food in India, in New Delhi. Very hot, loved it. I'm a huge fan of foods. Definitely consider myself a foodie.
Oh, excellent. Now, you already said you are, time is your one of the area which you want to have more to enjoy. So do you enjoy watching videos or reading books? What is your take on that?
I like both. I definitely enjoy books. Huge fan of the classics. I've got some of my Agile books up on my bookcase here. I'm reading I'm listening to a lot of Audibles at the moment. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is it's a great way of combining two things. I can go out for a walk, so I'm getting exercise whilst listening to a book at the same time. So I tend to do that a lot. But this year, a couple of books I've read include Turn the Ship Around by David Marquet. That's an Agile focus book, or a leadership focus book. Mm-hmm. I've listened to Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Mm-hmm. I reread Frankenstein.
Okay.
Mary Shelley. Mm-hmm. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, do enjoy my books. And my favorite book of all time would probably be The Northern Lights by Philip Pullman.
Alrighty. What is it all about this, the last book which you mentioned about Northern Lights?
So it's a book I was introduced to as a child. It was given to me by my grandmother. Mm-hmm. and it's a book in a fantasy world that kind of it's got parallel universes. So there's like another version of Oxford, mm-hmm. and there's this young heroine called Lyra Balakwa who takes on the world almost. Lots of very interesting themes. Yeah, very very fantasy. Yeah, fantasy-esque book.
Oh wow, absolutely beautiful. This is sort of a fairy tale, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. So thank you very much, Chris, for being on my podcast today, Chai with Sam Dosa, and adding great values to the podcast. And I hope everybody who's going to be listening will find this podcast interesting to and get into understanding what Agile is all about, the coaching business, also not only the coaching arena, but also how to look at it to bring better results in yourself as well as in your organization. It always starts from the top to go into the bottom. And if I will be putting a lot of resources which Chris has provided me, so get in touch with Chris. He got a huge selection of things and he likes to experiment with video games. So get in touch. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
Thank you.